Welcome to the Humans and AI Podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Okay, great. Jeremy, very nice to meet you. Thanks for joining the Humans and AI show. So let's get to know you a little bit more. Jeremy, I would like to know a little bit of your background about you. Most of your career has been working on infrastructure, workload, and data management. But you describe your career in three words: hard work realized. So yeah, would you like to talk a little bit about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, Flor. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. And yeah, I say that because I didn't come into the industry in a traditional way. I did not go to school right out of high school. I did not go to college. And so I started in corporate world at 19 years old and started doing IT because that's what I knew. That's what I understood. And I always enjoyed working with technologies. It really was a matter of just working really hard and continuing to take opportunities when they presented themselves, maybe ones that some people would be nervous to take because they would be a little out of reach and maybe I wasn't fully qualified for that role, but I believed in myself and that I could take that on. And I kept taking that next step and that next evolution, worked through every part of technology in terms of networking, programming, help desk and support, infrastructure, data management, all of those components, but really been focused here on the data center, cloud networking world now for just over a decade.
Yeah, since you've been always working in these fields, what are the biggest changes you've seen over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest changes is the fact that probably 10 to 15 years ago, people would build infrastructure and then they would figure out what type of applications and programs they would build on that infrastructure. Now it's the opposite way. It is that the applications, the data, all of that determines now what infrastructure you're going to put that on. And so that's a big change. And then obviously AI has changed the data center space in a way we haven't seen in the entire evolution of the data center space as a whole in over 20 years, based on just the absolute immense amount of power that it requires and how that completely changes how we cool a data center, how we look at the square footage of a data center, and the demand that exists right now is absolutely outpacing anything that I think any of us expected in the space. So I think those are the main things that I've seen change within the technology sector in the last 20 years.
Okay. Now you are the CEO in Hypelocity. So how it shaped your leadership philosophy today with all the roles you've been and now being a CEO. So how did it change the leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I learned from a number of leaders over time and did a lot of research on my own in terms of what leadership styles existed. A lot of reading of different books and different styles to figure out what I felt like had the biggest impact. I coached high school sports and select sports early on in my career as well. And so it was always about helping talent grow and how do I enable them to be better? At the end of each season, how did I make players better? Not only for the sport they were playing, but personally as well. And so when I researched leadership styles, it really came to this idea of servant leadership. And I think a lot of people say that, but really understanding what that means and how to help people grow into those opportunities. I had mentors of mine that enabled me through servant leadership, and it gave me the opportunity to be where I am today. And so really, that has really driven me to want to help others get to another level. Where do they want to be? And helping them grow their careers, and how do I help them through my leadership in doing that? So I think that's the biggest focus for me that really has been shaped over time by the opportunities I got and the ones that I want to be able to provide for others that I work with.
So talking a little bit about mentors and leaders, is there any or a few mentors and leaders that you could mention that they're like well-known or maybe not, but they could kind of help other people as well to improve their leadership?
Yeah, absolutely. Art Zaley is the CEO of DHI Group, which is a publicly traded company. Raul Martinick is the CEO of DataBank. And really, those are the two mentors that I've had that are absolutely phenomenal and well-respected within this overall space. And so it's one of those things where they continue to help me grow and build. It's something that I do. And that's why I also try to do skip mentorship with different people across my organization. I've opened it up to where people can come to me and ask for that type of mentorship. And so that's how I try to really give it back to, if you want it, I'm not going to come and offer it to everybody that, hey, let's go do this. But if you really have that passion, and I even had one of my leaders from the senior leadership team that just reached out to me last month and we started the program. I have a very specific program that I go through to talk about career pathing and how do we get you there and what does that look like? It's something that I just am passionate about and love to do that, and got it from those great leaders in Raul and Art.
That's great. So when was the turning point when you realized that AI workloads would transform your industry?
I'd say about 2 years ago, ChatGPT, I think, changed it for a lot of people. But even before that came out, we started to see the demand within the data center space, not only for what those data centers could handle in terms of power and changing the cooling from being traditionally air-cooled to liquid cooling and the difference in technology, but then we started to see the demand for, as inference really started to come out with ChatGPT, the demand for the actual internet capacity to be able to get it out to people and for them to be able to utilize this technology. It takes quite a bit in terms of that. And that's when we started to see it 2 years ago in the data center space. And then ChatGPT over the last year and a half or so has really started to change the way that we look at not just traditional training models, but inference and how do you deliver that. So it's been a really interesting two years or so.
Yeah, I think ChatGPT changed the whole thing. It's a new Google. Then before it was like, oh, go to Google. Google knows everything. Now it's go to ChatGPT. That's it. Jeremy, so at High Velocity, you're focusing on computing for AI, right? Do you have any example or use case that you can share with us to understand a little bit what you're doing at your company?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of different ways would be we provide more dedicated instances where a company can actually use their version of their trained model of AI in a very dedicated solution to them. So it's not just a cloud model, right? At the end of the day, where everybody can go out, all of that goes into that cloud model and everybody's sharing it. It's more of a very dedicated instance to them. But the key is this is the inference piece of it. We're not training it for them. When they have the model trained and it's ready to be able to use for the end users, we are able to get that out to locations that are closer to the end users so that they have low latency in terms of times for those AI models to work. And so that's really where we're focused is financial, healthcare, ones that want a very dedicated environment and being able to give low latency. Because if they're doing it via a trading platform or something like that on the financial side, if their user is using that, they want a quick turnaround and training. And then when you think about that as well for medical companies, if their doctors are using that or they're using that within a lab or they're trying to figure out what does this look like in terms of a surgery and what are the options, they want to be able to get that quick response, but they also want it in a compliant, dedicated environment. So that's really where we're trying to focus on providing dedicated inference environments, but being able to spread that out into multiple locations that are dedicated just to those companies specifically.
Nice. Do you have a successful use case about with a client that you could just share with us?
Yeah, I don't think I have like rights to actually share a client name, but in terms of an example is helping an actual banking institution create one of the first models in terms of that country's interaction with its user base at the end of the day and being able to utilize the platform. But it's also the first language model overall in their country. And so that's pretty exciting because that language did not have any AI models to work from. And so now we've actually started to build that and create that ability for them to actually have one within the country. And that's a very interesting one that we've been really excited about working on with the client.
Nice. Sounds good. Jeremy, there's AI, it's everywhere, right? Everybody's talking about AI, but there's a phrase that everybody's talking is AI at the edge.
Yes.
So it's everywhere, but I would like to understand what does mean for you.
Yeah. So I think the thing that some people may or may not understand about AI is that there is training and then there's inference, right? And training, they build these huge facilities with massive compute, but that's where it's learning. So it gets its data inputs and all of that, but that's really not critical in terms of sharing out. And so that's why you see massive facilities, and they can be anywhere. North Dakota, Wyoming, like they're putting those anywhere because they don't need to be close to the end user, because the training model is really built and AI is learning at that point. So it's not being used by users. It's doing all of the learning that it's supposed to do, and it's taking all of its inputs. So that's training. When we talk about inference, this is where users are actually using it. So think about ChatGPT. When they do all of their learning models and they're building those models, those can be in a single data center doing all of its learning within one location. But as soon as people want to use it across the world, they've got to actually be able to, those tokens have to be able to move at a decent pace. And so it's about connectivity. So they've got to put it in multiple geographies to lower that latency. And so that's really AI inferencing at the edge, so that no matter if a user is doing it on their laptop or their phone, like you said, you're doing a ChatGPT search, you've got to be able to have that distributed out. It can't be in a singular data center in North America and somebody's trying to access that from Singapore. That timing is not going to work. It's going to take forever to be able to access that. So that's really the idea of inferencing at the edge, is making sure that when these users are going to use these platforms, they're able to do that quickly and get quick responses, because the AI inference, where the model is already trained, is actually sitting closer to them in locations at what we consider the edge.
Okay. Makes sense. It's just, actually, I just was, you know, that I don't know if you check it or you realize it, but ChatGPT actually yesterday was down for a few hours. I don't know if it was the first time, but it was like, for me, it was kind of like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
We're going to have to go use Llama. We're going to have to use something else. Like, we have other learning models out there. But yeah, when they go down, it's an impact, right? Any technology, but especially AI, as much as people use it now, when those are down, it definitely creates an impact where people are like, what am I supposed to do? Just like you said, back in the day was Google search, and I just search it. And if Google's down, what do I do? Where am I going to search? So definitely interesting.
So Jeremy, opinion, how can we improve AI infrastructure to help developers build and make it a better experience for as well scientists, researchers, and ordinary people as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think DeepSeek changed the way that infrastructure is utilized, and it really helped in terms of what we're doing on the inferencing side, of being able to not have to create these high-end chips that are extremely expensive, high intense power workloads, by being able to create these types of models that are able to use more of a single GPU, CPU cluster type of environment. It enables people to have better access to this, because basically, if you were trying to access some of these other pieces, it's all the shared models, and we can get it from here, we get it from here, but it's really expensive. If you're actually able to simplify the infrastructure, make it more affordable infrastructure, and you're able to provide dedicated environments versus the cloud environments, and really bring that in, it gives access to more developers, as you mentioned, right? It makes it easier to access, makes it more affordable to access. That just makes it more, that's the idea behind everything. Like, how do we get the more people access? How do we make it easier? We make it more affordable. And that's really what we think is going to change the game. And that's why we continue to work with different AI models to figure out how we can optimize that infrastructure to keep it affordable for developers, and for doctors, and for researchers and scientists, right? Researchers are working on grants, and they don't have a whole lot of extra funds to spend on something like this. So being able to do that, I think, is really what's going to enable more and more people to be able to utilize it.
Yeah, I think everybody's right now talking about how to democratize AI in many ways that is accessible for everybody. So that's what I was kind of, I guess that your answer was pretty aligned to that as well. So Jeremy, how do you, in your startup, right? So how do you protect users' privacy? Because what you're doing, cloud and privacy cloud, yeah, private cloud and these things. So I would like to understand a bit more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why we work with companies specifically to do their models and ones that are dedicated to them, in infrastructure that's fully dedicated and has security built around them. So the idea around a firewall switch that creates this ability for only their users to access that platform, that then provides the security necessary to secure that data, make sure that happens. Also, part of us being a global company, like the example I gave before, we're able to put that specifically within a country's very specific environment within a country so that if they need their data to stay within that country, we can manage that. We can do that for them because that infrastructure is dedicated within that country and we allow them to manage that and provide the security within it. So it really is just about making sure that when it is needed and privacy and security is critical to the client and they want to be able to do that, that we provide a dedicated infrastructure with the proper security layers to give privacy to the end users.
Okay. Was more interesting, actually. So do you have any, or actually, which visionary or innovator influenced you the way that you think about the future in AI?
I'm sorry, can you restate that question?
Yeah, which visionary or leader influenced the way that you think about the future in the world of AI?
Yeah, I think Jensen from NVIDIA obviously is one of the forefronts out there that's talking about AI all the time, and they're providing the chips that build a lot of that. I think he has a lot of interesting ideas about how that's going to be utilized and how we make the most of it and how we continue to expand that capacity. And so I'm always paying attention to where his mind goes in terms of the evolution. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to think of where we were from power generation and servers just 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and where we are today and where they expect to be in the next year or two. As somebody that has to think about how am I going to deliver that kind of power? How am I going to deliver that type of capability? I'm always looking at where is his next step? Where is that thought and that evolution? And how are we going to be able to support that at the end of the day? And again, how do we then take some of that capability and knowledge and then try to put it in a more affordable solution? Because his solutions are pretty expensive as the new greater technology. So really trying to understand how we manage that. There's also the leader of Facebook that thinks the phones are going to go away in the next 5 years and it's all going to be through glasses, right? And Zuckerberg thinks that's going to be the new future. So it's always interesting to listen to some of these people that are at the forefront of technology, these great minds, and listen to their thoughts on how things are going to change. And to me, it's always, how are we going to enable that? How do we get ourselves prepared to help users access that and be able to do it in a secure fashion?
Yeah. It's crazy how everything is changing. By the way, are you using an Oura Ring?
No, I am not.
Oh, it looks like that. I was like, I felt like that.
About using one. I do actually want one. I told my wife, I said for Christmas this year, maybe I can get an Oura Ring because I don't have anything that tracks my steps or any of my stuff. All I have is my Sleep Number bed, but I need to be better about tracking that.
Yeah, because talking about wearables, right? Like the glasses, it's the watches, now the rings. It's like the whole world is changing. As you said, like in 5 years or even less, we're not going to need mobile phones anymore. Like that, it's just disappearing, the whole thing is everything. And now with the microchips that they are creating for putting in your brain, that it's just everything can be controlled in your brain. It's honestly, I don't know. Do you think it's scary or you really embrace that?
I think it's a fine line of being scared and embracing technology at the end of the day, right? There is a component where you can get a little scared about how that all works and what does that mean and where is it going to go? But I think as someone who's continued to watch technology evolve and create a better way of life, I get excited about those capabilities and it's simplification. But at the same time, you go, I'm excited about this idea that, yeah, I could just do it all through my glasses, or maybe I just touch something and it automatically does that. It's reading my brain waves. It's being able to do that. And that's exciting for what it does. The only thing that scares me as much, and I don't worry as much about the computer takeover as I do just a little bit that we've lost as a society in communicating with one another in a natural, real way, such as an interview like this versus people always, I was just in New York City last week and everybody's on their phones looking down the whole time. And we're not enjoying the rest of the world. And I think that's where I get a little scared. I try to get my kids to put down the technology and enjoy the world around them. And it's not as much a fear of something crazy as it is just us as humans and the way we interact with each other and with the world in general.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jeremy, before a CEO, you have another hat, right? Like you were, as well, I saw that you were CEO, manager, even in the beginning, being a developer. In your experience, what is the main difference between, for example, a manager role, which is still a leader, but it's still manager, and a CEO in your experience?
Yeah, I think each step of management creates something different. So as a manager, you're really focused on the team that you work with, right? There's not a whole lot of cross-functional management in a manager role. It strictly is about the team directly that works for you. Once you make it to a director, it becomes more cross-functional. Then you're working with other directors across the org, and that becomes that next layer of evolution of leadership. And then that takes the next step when you go to a VP or an SVP, whatever that might be. Then you're working not only across leaders within your part of the organization, now you're working with leaders across all parts of the organization, thinking about operations versus sales versus marketing, all those different components. Once you get to that level, then you're working out across all the levels of a team. And then as you become an executive, now you see all of that, but you're making sure that all of that cross-functional work is happening, and you're really guiding those teams into making the decisions and doing all of that. And then I will say, one of the things I was told before becoming a CEO and as a COO myself on an executive team, I was really good at managing all of the teams and the cross-functionality of the organization, making sure people were executing on things. But I never understood what a CEO was doing. And that is a completely different role from almost any layer of leadership. Your management is upward, more towards like the board. If you work with a private equity firm, you're working with VC, whatever that is, it really is focused there. You are still guiding your leadership team, but you're really guiding an executive team, which is already strong leaders that are already working across the org. So it really is more strategic in direction. And you're raising funds. You're out there promoting the company. You're doing what I call, I think the best way I've heard it put is, as a CBO, you're working on the business, not in the business. And I think that's just a phrase that sticks with me, because I'm working on how the business is going to grow, how it's going to function, how it's going to do it. I'm not working in the day-to-day. Now, I like to stay very detailed with my team, just because I came up as an ops person and I've worked so many roles. I like to understand what's going on so that I can make the right decisions, understanding every level, but it really is about working on the business. So I think that's where each step of management creates something different as a leader for you to focus on.
I love the explanation, to be honest with you. Right. Actually, I found it very interesting that you say work on the business, not in the business. And I don't know if you read this book from, what is this guy? From the guy who wrote the 4 Hours Work Week. Okay. I forgot his name right now. He's very famous. But he wrote that book, and he said that the levels of business owners and the levels of it's very similar to what you said. And I was like, it's really very, I actually think it's very interesting. Okay, Jeremy, thank you. So looking ahead, what role do you hope High Velocity will play in that in the future?
Yeah, we really want to be able to ensure that end users are able to access, whether it's AI, whether it's streaming, whether it's gaming. Like, we just want to be able to connect the end users with an experience that is fast, because everybody wants their connectivity to be fast. We want it to be secure, and we want to be able to create a great experience for everybody that's trying to access AI, gaming, streaming, whether that's Web3, crypto, so many different aspects. We just want to enable technology to be something that really is taking that edge and delivering it to users across the globe, and being able to be one of those companies that's seen as the facilitator in enabling people to enjoy the technology that either eases their life or creates more value to their life at the end of the day.
Okay. So, Jeremy, we just finished. Have a good time. Thank you very much for joining the Humans on AI podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you, Flora. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Humans on AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.